It's always when we fail to see the true nature of things that our views become clouded. Because of our preconceived notions, our greed and aversion, our likes and dislikes, we fail to see the sense organs and sense objects in their respective and objective natures, and we go after mirages and deceptions. We perceive permanence in the impermanent, satisfactoriness in the unsatisfactory, self in what is not a self, and beauty in the not so beautiful. And the Buddha said some of his words to describe things that are impermanent: dew drops at sunrise, a bubble on the water, a line drawn in water, a lightning flash. And they are callous, as in a conjuring trick, a mirage, a dream, a whirling firebrand circle, froth, a plantain trunk, banana trees, a hollow mill, no essence. But we don't see that, and we don't want to believe it. Naiponika Thera, one of the revered monks, practiced for many years in Sri Lanka, originally a German man in the last century. Insight wisdom, which is vipassana panya, seeing clearly insight, which is the ultimate liberating factor in Buddhism, consists just of this experience of the three characteristics applied to one's own body and mind process and deepened and matured in meditation. He says like that. The whole of Vipassana depends on this. To see things as they really are means seeing them consistently in the light of these three characteristics. Ignorance of these three, or self-deception about them, is by itself a potent cause for suffering. By knitting, as it were, the net of false hopes, of unrealistic and harmful desires, or false ideologies, false values and aims of life in which man is caught. Ignoring or distorting these three basic facts can only lead to frustration, disappointment, and despair. And I've written this little quote, which I think is one of those things. That there was a 90-something-year-old woman who was dying, and she turned to her doctor and she said, "Why me?" We must make sure that's not us. Disappointment, frustration, and despair. Okay. William Blake was born in the middle of the 1700s. He died in 1820-something. He who binds to himself a joy, does the winged life destroy. Who kisses joy as it flies, lives in eternity's sunrise. I've got goosebumps. It's the most beautiful. He who binds to himself a joy, as though it's a thing, and as though it's holdable, does the winged life destroy. It's just destructive to do this. Life is fluid, and we're trying to box it in and fix it, and we do this all the time. But if we can kiss this joy, we don't have to not relate to the beauty, even because it's passing. We can kiss it as it flies. I love that line. We can live in eternity's sunrise. Like everything's always going on. Life continues on. It just is now something new and now something else, and it's turned into something else and shifted into something new. And we can love it, kiss it, and enjoy it and release it without having to try and bind it, fix it, and then whine and complain. Oh no, I've lost it. We must remember the evanescent nature of life. So, just some words about it from other people. So, I want to talk more about actually practicing. So when we stay in the present moment with our attention more and more, whatever it is we're staying with our attention on, it doesn't matter whatever it is, sensation in the body or breathing, what we can see is something arising in our awareness. We stay and it stays doing whatever it does until it disappears or changes into something else. If we can stay long enough to see the thing disappear, and then stay, we'll now be living in an experience without that thing. When we can stay without that thing, we have experienced the presence of something and now the absence of something, and we can feel the difference. If we don't stay long enough, we can't see it and we can't feel the difference. We don't experience the difference. So if the thing is an idea, for instance, we can see the idea is in us, it has its life, and then it's gone, and we don't have the idea. We can feel how that has affected us. We can know what it's like to believe something, to have an idea, be in that idea, or then not be in that idea. free of the idea. The idea becomes a passing thing, a fleeting thing. It doesn't become like the truth and everyone's supposed to agree with that idea. And then we have to impose our ideas on other people. Because they're just ideas. We see that they're not the important solidity that we thought they were. It could be an idea, it could be a feeling, it could be a story you tell yourself, it could be an emotion that you have, that you hold about something. Everything is the same. But if we can stay and observe this, often you can't observe an arising. It's already here. You say, oh, it's here. It's sort of sneaked up on me, and now I'm feeling this, and I'm seeing this. But you can stay with something, and then you can watch it dissolve. And when it's gone, you can then stay in the absence of it. If you can do this with your emotions, with your moods, with the effect of a certain kind of thought, you can stay present long enough to experience the absence of it. After you've had the presence of it, you'll be able to compare the effect of it in your experience. Am I making sense? And it's by doing that again and again and again that you really understand not just having a thought or having a feeling or having an opinion or a story or a certain relationship with something. You can see what that does to you, how its presence does something to you and how its absence, having left you, does something else to you. And you can then, what you're seeing is patterning. You're seeing functioning. You're seeing how this causes this, causes this, causes this. And it isn't just to you, because when you're affected by whatever it is that you're affected by, and you're recognizing that, you are then affecting. Because you're a dynamic, active being who's then passing energy onwards. And so whatever that situation is that has you in its grip, that's affecting you in a certain way, is going to be moving through you and onwards. Is that what you want? And what we really want, deeply, all of us, is we want the good things. We want peace. We want joy. We want that feeling of friendliness and harmony. We all know what wholesome feels like. It feels free from stress. It feels free from oppression. It feels free from anxiety, free from distress, free from agitation. As we meditate, we access increasingly those more simple states. And we realize what is in their way and what we're perpetuating, or what is helping and what is hindering. What we deeply know we feel feels right for us. But we can't do any of this if we can't see it. And we can't see it if we can't stabilize our attention. And so it's often not a fun thing we're seeing, because we're seeing the presence and then the absence and then the presence again and then the absence of distress. So half of what we're seeing is liberating, and half of what we're seeing is oppressive, and depressing. It's like, oh no, here I am struggling again. But the more we're able to see, the more space we have, and the less, as I already said earlier, for instance, when Steve was talking about watching his thoughts in a period of meditation, the thoughts themselves, because they're seen more, become less dominant. And so all of these effects of even the stuff when we're gripped and caught becomes less dominant. We see it more, but it's less loud somehow, less of a force in us. So as well as anicca, because we see anicca, we see that the solid making of things is all done in the mind, and it isn't actually what it's like. And that just so changes the way we relate to things. Without us having to think our way to do this, we just does. We see, this is not going to last that long, so I don't really need to have it. It'll be nice for a while. I don't really need it the way I thought I did. We sort of see the longer story. But the other thing we see in this is we see not just that things are changing, we start seeing the causes for things to change. We start seeing the conditions that are changing, sort of the matrix that's part of the changing. And so we begin to realize that the thing isn't a discrete, separate thing. It's only there because it's part of all the other pieces, like I was trying to say when I was talking about, water bottles and bread, and you were offering bread. That it isn't just the bread we see, it's all the pieces that make it up and that it turns into. We start seeing sort of the bigger components of everything, how everything is belonging to everything else. And this is also revelational, and it's transformative as the way seeing impermanence is too. Because when you realize that things aren't just the way they are, they're there because of a whole lot of factors, you see that's true of everything and everyone and yourself. And the way you are isn't just because you've chosen to be that way. It's because of all these forces that have influenced you all your whole life that are part of why you have the take you have on things and the habits that you have and the personality that you have and the views that you have and everything to your behavior. And everyone's behavior is conditioned. And when we start seeing it's conditioned and we understand those conditions, it makes more sense. We make more sense to ourselves. We don't like, oh, how could I have done that? We don't say that, how could I have done that? We know how I've done that. I've done that because I was tired and I was irritated and I remember I've been triggered in this way 1,000 times before, and of course I'm going to do that. And then someone else does something offensive to us and we don't go like, how dare you? We know that they're in some kind of distress or whatever, if it's something that's unpleasant. And exactly the same for when it's pleasant. It's conditioned and we understand the conditioning. This is huge. It's everything. It's seeing more clearly, it's seeing more deeply, and therefore it's understanding how it all works. And we do have some free agency. We aren't just. We have some choices. When we have some clarity and we have a bit of space and we have our big mind, that big mind will help us make decisions which are going to help the wholesome happen, because we deeply want that. But when that big mind isn't functioning, and we are acting out, we're not helping the wholesome happen because we aren't even present enough to choose that. We're just caught in reality, in that little BA behavior, right? And so there's no choice. And lots of the time, if we don't train ourselves, we aren't going to choose anything. We're just going to be caught in our sort of knee-jerk reflexes, blaming our mothers, or whatever, our neighbors, or the devil made me do it, and so on. But when we can actually have a little more understanding and watch the process, then we do have some choice. But we still then only have some choice. But we better take that choice, because that's all we can do, is make some choice. And that becomes contribution. And so we choose to actually contribute towards goodness, because we are all motivated by that. We want to be happy. Every single one of us and every single thing we're doing, we're trying to actually feel better. It's a true urge. And so we don't have to try and figure out what, you know, how to do that. Mm-hmm. We have to see all the things we're doing which aren't doing that. We have to be patient about it, because there's so much we're doing that actually isn't helping. But we're meaning well, and little EA busy is actually trying to help. She just doesn't do such a great job, and until we can see that, limits of that behavior, then we're going to just keep doing it. So one of the ways we describe meditation, what's actually going on, it's a purification. The reason it's a purification is we're seeing the impurity. We're seeing the additions, we're seeing all the extra stuff that we do that's so busy, all in the name of improving things. It's actually not improving things, it's impure. And as we see, fortunately, all we have to do is see. We don't have to then fix, see and then get rid of, see and then change the program. The program is changed, and the stopping happens because we see. Seeing is everything. Vipassana, insight, to see, is where it happens. But we need to see clearly, and more clearly, and that clearly is a process. It gets more clear and more clear with time. But it has to happen through a steadiness of seeing, or else there's no purification possible. There's no understanding, because we don't really see the whole patterning happening, right? And you don't even have to deliberately look for a Nietzsche, although it's useful. I found when I was first, I was in a retreat one time, my mind was, you know, I've been already practicing for quite a few years, and my mind was fairly good at stabilizing, because I did 10 of those Goenka retreats. My first retreats were 10 of those 10-day retreats where you really did learn to concentrate with all that grimness, I have to admit, that I could stay, nail it down. And so then when I was asked, later, another teacher to notice the beginnings and endings of things. Just put that in as a suggestion. When you just notice the beginnings and endings of things, just said it like that really lightly. And I started to notice the beginnings and endings of my breath, like I was suggesting yesterday. and then the beginning and the ending of the gap between the breath, for instance. I started to hear the beginnings and the endings of sounds really rapidly, and then I started to see everything, beginning and ending, all over the place, and impermanence showed up big time. And then one of the things, this is part of the journey. When you see this, when you start seeing this, not for everybody, it can get really intense, because everything starts to dissolve. And then nothing is reliable, and then it gets scary, because we're vulnerable, and life is short, and we're mortal, and we don't know what's coming around the corner tomorrow. And so we get into, and we're already jumpy and nervy, we've already got that heritage, and so we're like, oh, it can trigger lots of anxiety. It's a phase. I had that phase in my practice for a long time. It wasn't like all day long, but when I was in intense retreat, it would come, whoa. And I've seen that in numbers of people. And then you move through it. But what happens is I don't know how to go much into this, but what we realize is that there's things are changing, and then there's my response, which is fear. And they're separate. It's like there's a sound, and then there's my name with the sound, and they're separate. And so when I can see that my change is fearful, the change itself isn't fearful, it's my response. And I can release and relax and relinquish that fear and let it be that it's changing, and then it's no longer a problem. I'm making it a problem because I am adding fear to this. But everything is insecure. This is an insecure realm. Life is insecure, and we have no idea. You know, knew anything, how it's going to turn out, anything. We want to know, we try and predict, and we use insurance policies and all these plans, and which is useful. It's not that we shouldn't do it, but deeply, it's actually we're sentenced to death, and we don't know when and how, and just ourselves, everything, everyone. And the Buddha says, you should actually say this all the time. You should say, every day you should say, I'm of the nature to get sick. Sooner or later, somehow or other, it's absolutely inevitable. I have the nature to grow old. It's completely inevitable. Nothing can prevent this. To die. Absolutely guaranteed. I don't even know how. I am of the nature that everything I hold dear and everyone will be separated from me. Sooner or later, somehow or other, everything. The only thing that I can rely on is the effects of my contribution energetically. When I contribute, whatever I contribute, that for sure is real. And so if I add more negativity to the world, then it's for sure going to happen to the world and to me. And if I add more loving kindness, then that for sure is a real thing. That's the only thing I can own, is the results of my deliberate intended actions. The results actually from my consciousness. Everything else is going to leave. And we should say it every day, because if we live every day that way, this is the big thing. If we live that way, we'll have a completely different relationship to the things that we're related to. That's the point. We will things to be as they are. We will allow things to come. We will allow things to stay. We will allow things to go without being in resistance all the time, without being against it. No contention necessary. We all have to like it, and it doesn't have to be good. And behavior is inappropriate, and so we have to be discerning and avoid and do what we can to help it and so on. But we don't have to say it shouldn't be. It is. For all kinds of reasons. We don't know most of what those reasons are. So we have to stop being in this resistance all the time. It doesn't help. What helps is go, oh, I see. This is like this. This behavior is really inappropriate. I'm going to get out of here. We don't have to, you know, say it's wrong and it shouldn't be. It is. We are. We're all however we are. We have to be able to hold ourselves that way and every behavior we have and thing we say and everyone else and everything else. It's all there for not a reason. I know the phrase is there for a reason. It's there because of conditions. It couldn't be other. Sylvia Borstein has this phrase I've told you. Lots of you heard of this. When walking down the street and somebody meets you, they say, how are you doing? The only true answer that you can reply is, I couldn't be better. Because I would if I could. And then to say, you know, well, if you know, all things being equal, blah, 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 well, all things aren't equal. They'll never be equal. I said, well, if we had a level playing field, blah, blah, well, we don't actually have a level playing field because we're all different and all everyone is different and is always changing. So why would we say if all things were equal? That's all just idealism, and idealism is false security. Okay, enough talk. So today, I say that we notice the beginnings and the endings of things. That we stay present, use your anchors as you have been doing, whichever ones you're using, stay in the moment with it, and see if you can notice things disappearing, things leaving and changing. Just make that be kind of where you rest your attention. And see what happens today. It'll be really interesting. Now, you've been sitting still for 1 hour and 10 minutes, so we'll take a break and stretch our legs for like 7 or 8 minutes. And then I want us to sit with this, because to sit with all this information while we're all in the room will be good. We'll sit with this for, 35 minutes, and then we'll walk.